Hello and welcome to Daniel's Den of Hoops. I'm your host, Daniel Pasley, where we talk about the inside of the game, the culture, and everything else in between.
What is going on, people? Welcome to the Stock Report. I'm here in the building with my man OP, going to discuss a lot of just in terms of what we've seen, in terms of whose stock is high, whose stock is low this week. And first, I'm going to start off with the Milwaukee Bucks, a team that's been criticized in terms of the discussion, in terms of how they're going to be able to adapt. You looked at their team. They're actually first in defensive rating last year, but going into this year, they're currently seventh in defensive rating, giving up 109.4, eighth in defensive field goal percentage. So teams are making about 46% of shots from the field. So it tells me that, at least looking at those numbers and watching them play, it seems like they're actually more willing to actually do things, at least in my opinion. You and I were very critical of Bud in terms of what we saw. A lot of kind of a lot of drop coverage, a lot of guys literally being caught one-on-one on a lot of screens and putting it at a disadvantage, obviously Drew Holiday is a guy who's an elite guard, but do you think this team to you is better put together in terms of how they look early?
If we're going from like last year to this year, I think they are right. You got Drew Holiday, you got Chris Middleton. So you definitely stepped up. You know, Chris Middleton on the offensive end has just been incredible. But on the defensive end, I do think you've seen some more varied stuff, like more screening, more trying to blow up stuff with dribble handoffs. I watched that Denver game last night, and you're seeing Giannis at the five, and he guarded Jokic for a large stretch, and he provides more versatility as a five, as opposed to Brook, who's like a strictly drop coverage guy. It's very hard to ask him to go switch out because of how slow-footed he seems to be. So I do feel like there's less angles to attack them. So if we're doing a one-to-one comparison from last year to this year, I think defensively their makeup is way better. This was talked about on a podcast we like to listen to, the dunker spot with Nekias Duncan and Steve Jones?
Yes, Steve Jones, yeah.
Yes, Steve Jones. And one thing they talked about is, is the drop dead? And I think it is dead in some instances where for some teams, and I think Milwaukee needs to even lessen that percentage even more. And for those who don't know what the drop coverage is, it's really your big guy dropping literally into the paint on any kind of screen roll. And what teams started to do across the league is they started being like, okay, that guard is going to pull up and just hit threes. And what are you going to do as a defense? Right. So to me, the question is, and I'm going to put this back to you, is what do you do? What is your best five starting? What is your finishing five? If you're Milwaukee, right? What is going to put you over the top? What is the winning basketball lineup that you have? And if it doesn't exist in a way that can get you beyond the conference finals, what is the next move?
For me, I would probably say that, looking at their roster, I would probably say Giannis at the five, Middleton at the four. I guess for now I'd go Dante, Drew Holiday, and who am I forgetting? Chris Middleton, of course. That'd be probably my backcourt. But to me, I think just looking at that, I think there's a hole on the wing outside of Middleton and Holiday, just because, like you said, I would like to see more versatility in terms of what they can generate for Giannis. Maybe it's another shooter. Maybe it's a bigger wing, a guy who can maybe be what they hoped Nikola Mirotic would be. Obviously, the defense was exposed in that Raptors series we saw a couple years ago where they couldn't play him. And I think, looking at that for me is what takes them to that Philadelphia level, that LA Lakers, Clippers, where Utah is right now, at least where we currently sit in terms of teams in that top tier right now. Whether they're finals bound, I don't know. But to me, I think making a move would probably be their best bet, especially with having Giannis locked in for that 5 years, because you want to win.
Oh, yeah, and it's, don't get it twisted. People think, all right, he's locked in and he'll be here for a while. You know, let's be honest here. We look at James Harden, right? Like, it only takes a couple more off seasons and a guy willing to drag everything down. All he's done is locked in that contract, and teams will definitely pay a premium to get a guy like him. So it's not like they've escaped a lot of their ills. And to be honest, like, to your point, like, I'm looking at some of their stuff here, and like, the problem they're going to have is the lineup you suggested I like, because what I think it does is it provides you with a lot of switchability, right? You got a lot of big physical guards. You got Middleton, who's long and athletic. Giannis, you can pretty much switch on to anybody in the league and be fine with it. And I think that lineup kind of gives you a team that allows Giannis to be used on the other end as a screener more, all right? Because you got some guys who can hit some open shots and create for him and not have the burden on him having to go downhill, downhill, downhill. But like you said, like, if Dante DiVincenzo is counted on to be your guy, what are you really asking for? Like, he's a guy that, you know, that's why that Bogey trade was such a big, you know, net loss, we felt like, for them going in, because he would have probably addressed that even more, right? So, but I do like that there seems to be some experimentation, which seemed to be Bud's biggest issue going into this season, was just the unwillingness to bend. You know, we'll talk about with other teams, you know, they don't bend as much as they should probably when it comes to the Bucks, because you got to be able to adapt. It's adapt or die in the NBA, especially in a COVID season.
Yeah, and even, you know, we've been, a lot of people have been talking about Brooklyn, and you looked at that game and you talked about it down the stretch. You can't have, especially Giannis, as talented as he is, you can't have a guy of his magnitude not take shots down the stretch. I know Chris Middleton, to me, looking at him, he's very good in the pick and roll, has shown his ability to create. But do you think that's enough for you in terms of late game situation? I know we've been talking a lot about defense, but do you think they have enough where it's like, okay, we're down by 1 point, we're down by 2 points, it's a crucial road game, whatever the atmosphere is at that point, who knows? But do you think all 10 people in the crowd, but do you think if you're Bud, do you think, okay, like, we're in a good spot in terms of I can trust Chris Middleton or even Jrue Holiday? Because I feel like Giannis should be at least involved. He doesn't have to score, but at least create something, especially in late game situations.
Yeah, it's probably a little bit overrated how much you can use him, like how much his shooting is going to affect him. I do think there's times he gets caught up in, like, I got to take this pull up to prove I can take it, as opposed to, like, I can just go and dribble, you know. If somebody's giving you a runway, attack the runway. Like, you don't have to necessarily shoot it as much as he does. But on the offensive end, I just feel like there's this real attachment to what Lopez gives him defensively. And he's a really good corner 3-point shooter. So he provides a spacing, but I just feel like down the stretch, and if you're not going to provide Giannis with an opportunity to play with four guards or four wings, whatever you want to call positions these days, because that's a different rant, because I think they stopped existing a long time ago. But if you want to put some wings or ball handlers with them, that's the only way that I think you want to maximize Giannis. You want to have Giannis in situations where guys are going to have to hug a little bit tighter on help. Right. If you're going to give a guy like that runway, you need to surround him with players that can clear the runway for him. Right. Right. And up in this point, just relying on too much size, just feels like it's, especially when you got an alien, because he can do everything that you want a five to do. Right. He can switch. He can drop. He can block shots. He can get in the passing lanes. He's strong as hell. There's only a couple players in the league that you could say are stronger than him. It's like LeBron and Kawhi, like pound for pound, like just. And, you know, Jokic, and he did a fairly decent job on Jokic on the defensive end. So, So my answer is, I don't know, but I don't think it's, I don't like it. And the fact that I say I don't know probably means that I'm really saying no, but I'm too scared to say it out loud.
So before we move on, so what would you say the chances are Milwaukee actually looks at their team and makes a move from a scale of 1 to 10?
On a scale of 1 to 10, I think if it's I think they stay pat. So I think they're going to, what I think they should do is change. So what I want to say is they should make it a 9 out of 10, but I really feel like they feel like they have the answer. And it, back to our lineup, just a little quickly, I want to add their best lineup for plus minus is Bobby Portis, you know, jab, Chris Middleton, Drew Holiday, and Augustin and Antetokounmpo. So again, a smaller four to kind of what we're talking about. So, but yeah, I think they make move. What do you think they do? Do you think they do?
I don't know if they do, but I wouldn't be surprised if they looked at, you know, Dante and Brooke and said, okay, we, like you said, how much value do we have for these guys and how much creativity can we get in the market? Because like you said, you know, the tape shows what's the adjustment going to be when you got to, the thing I've liked is they've actually gone with Bobby Portis at the four. So maybe Bud is listening to the podcast or at the five and having Giannis, having that combination, but I think more of that and going after a bigger wing will definitely complement, you know, their issues, because it'd be a failure to see this team not at least scratch the surface in terms of making that finals run.
Of course. And like you said, all their best lineups, you know, mind you, the minutes played is varied, but all their best lineups, like when it comes to plus minus, all involve a combination of Portis and somebody. And Portis and Antetokounmpo is involved in all those kinds of lineups, just to kind of show you that maybe that's the kind of answer that they go with. Maybe he is the Mirotić and is the guy who can add some 3-point shooting and, more importantly, allow you to play on some bigger fours and fives.
Yeah, for real. And just to move on, we're gonna draw it to the other side of the spectrum and talk about no defense, but this team actually has been playing well. The Sacramento Kings currently sit dead last in defensive rating at 117.6. But they've won seven of their last nine games. That, you know, they lost last night as we record this against the Sixers, who have an MVP candidate in Joel Embiid. But, you know, looking at their roster, the play of De'Aaron Fox, he's been a monster. I think you've talked about him being one of the more undervalued guys in the league. You know, being in Sacramento, he doesn't get the credit he probably deserves, but he's been a monster. Tyrese Halliburton's actually been everything and more in terms of what they've been able to do, shooting 45% from three. Harrison Barnes, another guy who, you know, the Cavaliers decided to ghost and say, all right, we're going to make you shoot. And he shot, he's actually shooting 41% from three this year. So that shows me he's definitely chipped away and worked at it. But to me, I think Buddy Hield, he's going to have to, you know, rev up his game. And I think some of it, you know, I would like to see, at least in my opinion, some more situations where they involve Halliburton as like the lead guard per se, because to me, you know, looking at some of his numbers, you know, the team has such, you know, they move the ball so well with him, and he's a guy who plays off of De'Aaron Fox as well. He's shooting about 53% from corner threes and like I said, 45 on the year. But I just really would like to see him have more control in the offense. I know it's a rookie. You would like to, you know, kind of ease him in, but to me, for that team to take that next step, or at least be in that contention on a consistent basis for that playoff spot they've been trying to get since 06, they really got to trust this young guy. And I really like their guard play. And to me, I think it, in a way, it's kind of being wasted in some situations. Would you agree?
Yeah, I'm looking at their net rating. Even though they are playing better, they're still minus four, which is like 25th in the league. So to me, this feels like a pig and lips and putting a lipstick on a pig. For now, I don't know if this is sustainable. I don't want to poo-poo a winning streak and a team that's put together some wins. And I don't want to even not say that Barnes has been way better, you know, in terms of his outside shooting. I'm worried about the fact when I look at their team, I see a lot of Hassan Whiteside, speaking of drop coverage, and guys who don't ever show getting a lot of burn. And I'm also worried about what they do with their five situation right now, because I feel like they got Bagley, they got Whiteside, and they got Holmes. Holmes is a little undersized, but he's really good. He's a guy like a lot of teams could definitely try if they do start to slip, as a guy I would call. But I do think that's their biggest concern, is where do you go with those fives? Because those fives are all different in their own way. And I don't, and you guys know me, I got a Luke Walton agenda. I'm just going to straight say it. I don't love what he usually does. They've impressed the last couple of games, but you can see they have an issue. I mean, we know we're going to talk about this with Embiid. He's going to kill everybody. But the problem is their best lineup involves a guy who's not really a five. And Bagley just hasn't seen – Bagley has moments, but he just doesn't seem to fit with what they're trying to do. And but, you know, kudos for them. But, you know, I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think this is sustainable. I feel like if we do this thing in 2 weeks, I feel like it would be like, all right, they're 13th again. But, you know, De'Aaron Fox, keep doing your thing. That kid's special. Remember there was the De'Aaron Fox or Lonzo Ball argument? That's over. I think that's done. But yeah, as the counter, I'm going to come back with your question. What do you do when your best lineup involves a lineup of, like, let's say I'm looking at their best lineup and it's Barnes, De'Aaron Fox, Haliburton, who you know I love, and Hield and Holmes. That lineup is four guards and a possible big, right? And I feel like teams will be able to attack them in ways. So what would you do differently, right? Because I don't feel like switching and blowing up stuff is going to work against it in the long term with this team.
Yeah, and I was actually thinking about it. You know, this team, just looking at the personnel, they don't have enough outside of Harrison Barnes and Corey Joseph. You know, they don't really have two guys, or those are two guys on their team that I can look at and say, all right, I can at least trust these guys in situations. I would like to see maybe some more Harrison Barnes at the four, and maybe go Tyrese, Hield, and Fox. But I think those three, those three got to be on the floor for me, especially in late game situations. But I really don't understand, especially because the way Bagley is, he's kind of like a face up big, at least based on what he was kind of looked at coming out of college. And a lot of teams aren't really going to that. You know, you got to be real elite. You got to be a Joel Embiid. I actually listened to a video. I think it's approximately 35% of possessions end up with a face-up. And it's usually guys like AD, Joel Embiid, the names that we talk about, perennial NBA guys. And I don't think he brings enough value to that team on defense. And I think they know it. You know, Hassan Whiteside, another guy. We've seen constant film of him just not showing, or he would oversell and actually give a dump off to his man. Rashawn Holmes, to me, I think is the bright spot, and it kind of sucks because I think he's being wasted there. I think if he was on a team that had playoff aspirations and legitimate ones, he would definitely help. You know, Brooklyn, for example, they can use any type of activity on defense right now. But I think, like you said, man, this team is playing well currently, but I don't know how they can sustain this.
Yeah, and it sounds like we're saying stock down, but I just feel like I felt like we just ruined a winning streak. I just look at their for sure. Haliburton, Fox, Barnes got to play. Those three are always going to be on the floor, and then Holmes is their best big. I just don't understand how you decide to, if Bagley's a guy who's struggling and learning to play the pick and roll, you bring in Hassan Whiteside to mentor him. Like, I didn't understand that move. I want to see if it's possible for them to try to find another five to go with that lineup to maybe let Hassan walk. Because right now, I do feel like teams, when they get some film on them, are going to be like, all right, if I'm coaching against the Kings, I'm just trying to get switches, and I know I can exploit them. I do think De'Aaron Fox is really good at being more athletic than most guards, so he can dart and get into passing lanes. Haliburton is super smart. He's a smart defender, and he can play on and off the ball, which I thought his value was. And, you know, and I'll give Sacramento credit. Him going there made perfect sense, because I think his value, even though he can play on the ball, I think his real value and potential is actually being an off-ball guard. So I do love the pairing with him and Fox. So I want to say a positive thing, because we were talking about this is a team that's won a bunch of games. You know, under the hood, it doesn't look so great, but right now the car looks clean at least.
Yeah, for sure. And I think they're going to have to look at Whiteside. He's had a bunch of DNPs too, so maybe they've actually kind of internally had a discussion in terms of, all right, we got to find a buyer for this guy. Maybe he's a buyout guy. I don't know how the market's going to be for him, especially going forward. But, you know, I want to move on. Like you said, the Kings are playing well, but obviously there's going to be some long-term things that we're going to have to look at and see from them to prove it. Speaking of a team that has had a track record of proving it, the Toronto Raptors, you know, showing some local love. They definitely came out the gates, Pascal Siakam in particular. You know, people were really down on this team. You know, we didn't really see much in those first, I want to say, 10 games. But lately they've been playing real well, despite having guys like OG and Anobi out of the lineup. But, you know, they're a top 10 offense with a rating of 113.4. They have had a slippage in defense at 111.5, which to me, you know, a lot of people are kind of poo-pooing their defense. But I think with a Nick Nurse coach team, and even with some of the woes they've had in their front court outside of Boucher, and Watanabe has actually been a sneaky good addition for them. But to me, I think that it's actually something they can address through the market. And it's something that, okay, they may look at and say, hey, can we make a call for Rashawn Holmes or whoever the guy is? But Pascal as well, he's been actually figuring it out. He shot, you know, it was 3-game sample size, but in December he was averaging 7 threes per game. He's actually scaled that back down to 4, still only at 27%. But to me, I think he's actually been doing pretty well, especially shooting from 10 to 16 feet. He's shooting better. Shooting about 43% from there, and from 16 feet to 3, shooting 43% as well. So to me, I think that part, and he has more pace to his game, and at least in the most recent stretch. Yeah, a lot of people tend to, you know, look at his spin move and say, hey, that's all he does. But I think actually with a lot of his backing down, his baby spins, his half spins, he's actually buying himself time, and he's actually seeing the floor. And he while doing that, he's actually gaining ground. Whereas before, you know, I did a breakdown, he's making spin moves, he's real small with his footwork, so he's letting guys crowd him, or he would just spin and be under the basket and not be able to see any outlet. So to me, I think that's been the biggest part in terms of how he's been able to turn it around, and how this team, of course, has been playing themselves into, you know, the playoff picture.
Oh yeah, and you know, I think you know, Siakam's kind of just been more comfortable in his rhythm with his jumper. And, you know, and I think the key to them is hasn't even been as good as Siakam's been, because he's been the last few games, he just seems like he's kind of ready to the ship. It's really been Fred and OG, who's, you know, he was out, he's been out for the last couple of games. But OG, to me, he was their best player from the beginning to now. If we're going, like, between him and Kyle, just, like, a steady influence, a guy who is just like a knockdown space-up shooter. He's kind of figured out how to attack closeouts in a way that he wasn't able to do his first couple years. I think he was actually one of the guys who came out of the bubble with a little bit more confidence, being able to have to defend guys like Brown and defend guys like Tatum and have to fight and drop coverages with Mark behind him, or make sure that we're not getting, you know, or surge behind him. And he's been adjusting so well. OG has just been, you know, impressive. I really feel like outside of Kyle, he's been their most consistent guy from day one. And another thing that I think they had is, speaking of big guys to get rid of, I think once they got rid of Alex Len and kind of made this commitment to, okay, we're going to play Boucher. We're going to live with the fact that he doesn't have the same length and strength as let's say a Baines guy, but we're going to have him because he can hit three-pointers down the stretch, right? And I think the key is, who would you say is the guy that still needs to pick it up? Because I feel like the last couple of games, they've really gotten efforts from everybody. And this feels more like the Raptors team from last year, where it's just like, pick a guy and they're going to have a good night.
Yeah, and I think to your point, it's going to have to be OG. You know, you saw in the Indiana game, especially when they go small. You know, Indiana, of course, probably the biggest team in the league. starting with Sabonis and Turner in the front court, like it's Duncan and Robinson or various other big man combinations we've seen in the early 2000s before. But I think he's gonna have to be the guy, and he's been a guy, like you said, he seems like he has watched some film and he's actually said, okay, yeah, I'm not gonna be a line drive guy. I'm gonna be a guy who's okay. You're gonna cut me off and go between the legs. I'll spin off of you. I'll make my reads. And I think him being able to play past one or two dribbles has been the biggest step in his game. And that's going to have to be something that they're going to have to count on, because as much as we like to, you know, call him a 3-and-D guy, he has the potential to be good at the rim. And even looking at his shooting chart, he's about 69% in the restricted area for his career. And before, obviously, he was outshot 76% in the restricted area. So if he's able to get to the basket and with the way Toronto relies on threes, he can open up a lot of things for guys. And we can talk Pascal, we can talk Kyle, we can talk Fred. But like you said, if he is able to sustain this and actually be a guy that they can depend on to get baskets in mismatch situations, then he could be a threat for this team to actually make some noise in the playoffs, hopefully.
Yeah, I mean, he's a premium for what you want, right? If Pascal's playing well and OG's been the steady guy, you're a team that you don't really want to face in the playoffs, right? Because, you know, the problem with what happened last year is Pascal's game kind of went into a cliff. Maybe he wasn't in the kind of shape, you know, the bubble we can talk about a little bit later. In general, I think people don't realize how hard that was on a lot of these guys, just the mental toll of not being able to pick up a basketball and then having to kind of have this bunker mentality. But I think OG is the guy. Fred has been amazing. Shout out he has the career high for Raptors points. He just broke the record, correct?
Yeah, 54. Right? Yeah.
54 the other night in Orlando. He just kind of 11 threes. He was just hitting everything. And he's a guy, speaking of a drop coverage, he's a guy you never want to play drop coverage against because he's got that pull-up. And he will take it and he will make it. He's more confident than ever. And they've been playing some really good basketball. And we know that Nick Nurse is going to try everything. And the reason why we haven't kind of talked about them for the last couple of weeks is there's nothing to talk about. They were just kind of blah. But they've slowly worked their way to what, their fifth or sixth in the East right now, considering where they started, where it looked like, hey, blow this thing up you don't want to play these guys in the first round. And, you know, that's it. That's all, man. Good. I'm glad they're playing well because, you know, our friends are miserable when they're not.
Yeah, for real. And to me, I kind of said that their defense for me, I think it will pick up as the season goes along, especially with OG hopefully coming back in the next couple of days. Do you think they make a move at the deadline in terms of that center spot? Because obviously, a lot of people have been looking at the Baines deal and saying, you know, that's a guy that they want to ship out, whether it's Drummond, whether it's a Rashawn Holmes, a cheaper contract. Do you think that'll help solidify them in terms of making that run in that second half?
Oh, they need a five like yesterday, right? Boucher's problem is that as great as Boucher has been, and I just feel like they should just roll the dice and let him play anymore. He blocks shots. And he'll get out and run and he'll hit the occasional three enough to keep the, you know, the defense honest. The problem is he's thin and like teams will attack him and teams will get into a body. When you play an Embiid, you're going to have problems, right? And that's the kind of teams you're going to play against. It's good enough to beat a team like Boston, right? But is it good enough to go deeper when you got to play a team with a legit big, like Giannis? Like you need guys who can, you know, wall off with. Drummond would be perfect, right? But again, what the market's going to be, because I feel like, the Drummond market's going to be huge, right? Like even if Cleveland decides we rather cut bait and walk, Brooklyn's going to call him. A bunch of other contenders are going to call him. Outside of maybe Philly or Denver, who's a real contender, who wouldn't call him? Boston definitely is going to call him. So you're kind of, you know, in the pool of sharks when it comes to Drummond. But yeah, for sure, if they can get a big guy, they're a nightmare, right? Because they got all the wing in the world. They got three guards that are playing unbelievable, and Powell and Kyle and Fred. So yeah, they're back to what we thought they were going to be this year, which is the team we had them projected higher than even people who we figure are stands. We had them third or fourth, and I think they're going to get there in the long run. Mm-hmm. So that's it. That's all I'm at.
Yeah, for sure, and I definitely agree with you. And even, you know, even the Clippers may look at him as a guy, Drummond in this case, as a guy if he's a bio candidate, and look at him and say, hey, we do love Zubats, but you know, he, you know, like you said, a lot of teams outside of the Lakers would definitely be looking at him. But in terms of stocks being down, we're gonna start first and foremost with this proposed All-Star game. To me, you know, Omar and I definitely down on this, down heavy, especially with a lot of the stuff that's transpired, but at least recently, the last week. But I think, to me, they're just wasting their time. Yes, I get it. You want to make your revenue and this and that and blah, blah, blah. But to me, I think this is a lost season in terms of some of the revenue you were hoping to get. You know, NFL is an example, you know, the salary cap's going down. Even them, they use the verses to, you know, promote. Obviously, yeah, it's not the same environment, but at least send guys their jerseys. You can reserve a time slot for that TV money you want to make and kind of have like a celebration of guys and what they've accomplished through the year. But to me, man, I think that it's just a dumb idea, to say the least, in terms of what the NBA wants to, you know, possibly do. What are your thoughts? I know you're down, but what are your thoughts, man?
I think anytime the best player in the league and then your young stars and your other young up-and-coming stars, like, so what I'm talking about is LeBron and De'Aaron Fox was actually the first guy to say this, and then Giannis. Once those guys are publicly saying that this isn't cool, right? Like, so it's not even like you're saying it's an old guard. It's, you know, you have a bubble that was successful. The Heat have been affected by this, and the Lakers have been affected by this, where they've only had 70 days off. They get 2 weeks. That, you know, the proposal was at the beginning that we said, hey, we're not going to have an All-Star game. So everyone thinks, all right, I'm going to use that time to recoup. We're going to treat this as a break. And then they just could not say no to the money, right? And the NBA, we could talk about how they put Black Lives Matters on the court. We could talk about how they're progressive they are compared to like the NBA or MLB. At the end of the day, they're a naked corporation. And they literally just said, where is the money? And optically, it looks bad, because what you're telling everybody is we cannot ignore the money. We are going to say player safety be damned. We're going to take the risk of putting every all-star in one of the worst COVID-ravaged states and hope this doesn't work, where our fans literally yell without mask at our best player. You know, this is where we want to put everybody. I'm not like disappointed, because like it's you know, they're a corporation. It's not like I'm surprised. It's just more like, what do you think the optics are going to be? Now, you know, if the NBA PA agrees with it, it's going to happen. I don't think it's a good idea. You know, it's a Chris Rock bit. Like, you can drive your car with your feet. Don't make it a good idea. Like, you shouldn't do it if you don't have to do it. It already feels as sports are already unnecessary with the pandemic. This feels extra unnecessary, right? At least the other ones was like, we're trying to make TV money, 72 games, we need to get the money in. This feels like we need to get all the money and all the eyeballs. And shout out to the fact they don't have no creativity. Try something different.
Yeah, for real. I think, you know, as much as we've talked obviously about the NFL with the whole, they've been super hypocritical in terms of their progressive movement recently. You know, shout out to Cap for starting all that. But even them, like I said, you know, having maybe a show where, all right, we maybe won't have it, but like you said, have some different optics where it's like, okay, we give an appeal to the fans of, oh, yeah, it's not the regular world that we live in terms of last year's All-Star game was probably one of the best since like the early 2000s, in terms of, you know, competitive aspect. But I think we can return to that, but let's be mindful of what reality is. And it's like you said, it's a pandemic. We're all being hit by it in different ways. And yeah, that's all I got, man.
Yeah. And we'll talk, like, you know, one of our stocks down kind of connects with it, but at the same, it just doesn't make any sense. Like it just, they need, I think at the end of the day, it's just pretty obvious what they did. They're just chasing the money. They made a deal with Turner and they're like, hey, Turner is kind of like, we need eyeballs. We're not getting these eyeballs we normally get. And ESPN's like, we need eyeballs so we can have Rachel Nichols and Matt Barnes and whoever the guest host is and Paul Pierce go, and don't get me started on Paul Pierce. I like Barnes and Nichols. I'm not talking about them. I'm talking about Paul Pierce. Everyone knows me, knows my Paul Pierce agenda. But anyway, have those guys have the content for the next week just so they can talk about it. I'm going to watch because I'm like a fiend, but I'm not going to like it. You know, so, all right.
Yeah, it's true, and I definitely will enjoy it if it does happen. But just to move on, you know, we watched the Raptors game last Friday. What would that be? The 5th of February. For those who weren't watching, you know, KD starts the game on the bench, eventually comes out, which all of us, we were talking amongst ourselves in terms of our friend groups. We're like, what is going on? Like, this from an optics perspective, we're like, what happened? This guy's test apparently was inconclusive. They're trying to research in terms of what happened. He plays, doesn't get into rhythm, obviously, in terms of, you know, foul trouble. The fact that he checked into the game pretty late, you know, first time in his career coming off the bench, but they eventually take him out the game, which to me, I'm kind of like, whoa, is this like Rudy Gobert 2.0, where it's like we have, you know, you know, this guy, the super spreader. Thankfully, it wasn't the case. They said he rolled with somebody who was positive. They were both wearing masks, but obviously KD is tested negative. Apparently, supposed to be available Friday. But what's your take on this whole protocol thing? Because to me, I think it's a little confusing in terms of, you know, how does a guy start the game possibly positive and then, all right, we'll play him. And then it's like, no, hold on. We got to research this a little more. That to me just wasn't a good look.
Yeah, it goes back to what we were talking about earlier, right? Like just the naked cash grab. Like, so it doesn't feel like this happens. Like, I'm not a conspiracy brother. Shout out Dave Chappelle. But, like, I'm not the kind of person that thinks, like, Adam Silver's on the phone going, like, yo, this is a national – because it was national for those that listen in Canada. It was a national TV game in the States. And they're on the phone like, yo, this is national TV. Yo, KD plays. That test is inconclusive. You know, like, and I don't think that's what happened, but that's what it looks like. And you don't need that as a league. You don't need that optics. You need to set where if somebody's with an inconclusive test, they're not allowed to play. And it needs to be written in stone. You're not allowed to play. If somebody has an inconclusive test, they can't play. Point blank, period. We're not going to retest, or we will not let you play until we get a negative up until this time in the game. You cannot come and play. Do not pass go. Do not collect $200. Right. I don't think they ever, I think, again, this is what happens. Like we're dealing with a pandemic, and the NBA didn't have to do this last year. They had the bubble, took care of all of this, right? Players didn't have to really police themselves. And now you're worried about guys' mental health. Guys are feeling burnt out. Speaking of the Nets, we've talked about Kyrie in the past, and like it just feels like a league again that is saying one thing but doing the other, right? And he almost felt bad for KD. And again, side note, that's the most millennial team I've ever seen. Like James Harden, passive aggressive. One guy doesn't believe in the Earth's round. The other guy's tweeting when he gets in trouble. Like it's the most, and I'm a millennial. So this is the most millennial oversharing team I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, and I just make the cut on that too. So, you know, that for me, I definitely say that, you know, it definitely was something that was entertaining in terms of obviously the Free 7 campaign going on. Sounded like some type of, you know, free my guy type movement. But yeah, man, I just really think the management of it just as a whole was just so messy. And do you think obviously this is going to be a problem, because let's say this potentially does happen in the playoffs. Let's say, yeah, it's Giannis, KD, you know, what are we going to do
then?
That's
what I'm saying. It doesn't, they've already, and the thing is too, it's even the All-Star games connected to this too. they haven't scheduled the back half of the season because they knew this was a possibility. They're not stupid, right? Washington's played like five games, it feels like. You know, they've lost all of them except for against the Nets. But they've played like five games, it feels like, right? The Nets, the Heat. I like to know what the heck the Lakers are doing that nobody else is doing right now. And I think the Raptors are like the only two, if I'm correct, are like off the top of my head, they're like some of the few teams that haven't been touched by COVID. I don't know what they're doing that other teams aren't. Maybe they can share with everybody else. But like in terms of like actual like contact tracing, again, this is what happens when you're dealing in a pandemic, right? When you're trying to play in the middle of a virus that is highly infectious with variants that come into place, which again, all viruses do that. They always mutate. And more infectious than ever, you are going to deal with these kind of dumb situations, right? And again, they don't know what's happening because they haven't even scheduled the next half of the season because they know this was going to happen. They knew this was going to be a case. They know it could be game three. A team could be down 2-0 and all of a sudden their best player's out. You know, and what do we do? Right. And, you know, hopefully by then it's taken care of. But let's not pretend that this is going to be an easy fix. Let's not pretend that this won't be the last time we talk about it, because I guarantee it's going to happen again.
Yeah, for sure. And I like to see how this league obviously polices it. And obviously with the vaccine coming out, we've had discussions about who's going to take it, who believes in it, et cetera, et cetera. So that all that stuff's going to have to come into play. A lot of stuff we can't control. But speaking of, obviously, things evolving, you know, KG recently came out and said, you know, he kind of questions in terms of whether guys from 20 years ago would be able to, you know, adapt and be able to play today. Just to paraphrase what he said, I would go into depth, but it's a lengthy quote. But I think to me, you know, shout out to all the old heads. This is a trending down for y'all. But I'm not going to sit here and say, you know, none of those guys, like, let's say, for example, a Baron Davis or an Allen Iverson wouldn't be able to adapt and play today. Because obviously that's the problem we have in terms of we compare generations in terms of, okay. And then you have people saying reckless stuff. Like, okay, I don't know if LeBron could last in the 80s. It's like, all right, a guy who's 6'9", 160, 70 pounds can't be built for that. But to me, I think it kind of shows you how, you know, I agree with him because it kind of shows you how you and I talked about this. Being a role player, especially, this is where this comes in. Because obviously the stars are going to be able to adapt. But your Steve Kerrs, no offense to guys like that, you know, even Derek Fisher, guys who are very, you know, had very decorated careers. But let's be honest. Guys like that probably in today's NBA would probably have to be fighting for a roster spot, especially with certain guys who are a bit taller who possess similar traits to what they did. You know, those are guys who maybe have to go to Europe, they have to go to Asia or various countries in order to play or even play in the G League. Maybe in terms of a guy like Robert Horry, especially for those who watch him in Houston, a guy like that probably would be he'd be way more valued, especially with a guy who's able to guard 1 through 5, depending on what lineup you have on the court. And Clifford Robinson, RIP to him, another guy from that era, one of the stretch bigs. I think it kind of goes place to both parts. Like, yeah, I see where he's coming from in terms of, yeah, certain guys wouldn't be able to adapt. But at the same time, I think it just shows you the evolution of the game, because I think the game is in good hands, especially with how we've talked about, you know, the league is currently has highs in terms of 3-point percentage, 37%, up from about 35%. So what's your take on this? Because obviously we've had our discussions in terms of how the game is definitely seeing guys like Draymond's and guys like Zion Williamson, who probably would be considered tweeners. They'd be considered the Marcus Fizers.
Yeah, I'm showing my phone for a reason. The reason why I'm showing my phone is that it's upside down. But the reason why I'm showing my phone is that my phone has evolved throughout the years, right? My phone has evolved. I had a BlackBerry with a side scroll. I've had the Touch. I've had a Samsung. My phone today could show me a 2-minute video of my daughter growing up from little baby to right now, where she terrorizes everybody. Things evolve, right? Things change. change. We do this in everything. We could, 5 years ago, there was no way we could do this podcast, right? This is what's happening in the game, right? It's evolving. Now, the irony of KG saying it is not because that, you know, it's not credible, because he would be disgusting in this age, day and age too, just because like, you know, a 7 foot dude who can play the two sometimes, step out, hit from three, guard your ones and twos. You know, a guy like that being told early, hey, just step out and out another 5 feet. Mm-hmm. Like, he would go berserk in a game like this. Imagine like what he would be. The thing is, the game's evolved to a point where before Steph and before Dame, the only guy you can think of who was even close to this was like Gilbert. Right? Like, Gilbert Arenas was a guy who would pull from like 35 feet in your face and not care. Right? He's a guy who would do very well. I don't think he'd do as well as he thinks. He said he'd average 40. I don't think so. But
he would definitely. That's the athlete's mind, yeah.
Yeah, that everyone thinks they would always be better. But it is true. I think the nuance of the argument is, I think it's a lot. There's more paths to getting to the NBA than ever, right? There's the G League, right? You can go to Europe. There's more ways to get there. There's more teams, right? However, what Fred VanVleet has been asked to do, speaking of stock up, versus what Steve Kerr is being asked to do, and, you know, we're not hating on Steve. Steve Kerr said this himself, is totally different. They're about the same height. Steve Kerr was asked to space out, hit the open jumper, move, get out of Mike's way and his fists, play some defense, you get caught on ice, ISO, and do your best, right? Fred, at the same height, is being asked to run an offense, run a pick and roll, read the job coverage, make sure that he has a tight enough handle so he can get off of those guys. A guy like Steve Kerr nowadays is 6'8", 6'9", or he's Danny Green, right, who's 6'6", with a huge wingspan and can defend at a high level, as much as we want to talk about Danny Green. That guy is 3 to 4 inches bigger, 20 to 25 pounds heavier, right? And it's just the way it is. Jokic is the example he brings up, is true. Like, he kind of took what Dirk does from like that iron leg, one-legged step back, to like he does that little pulse thing where he kind of rips you with the elbow. That's a foul, by the way. But he rips you with that elbow and gets to the hoop. The game's evolved. The game is more skilled than ever. And I do feel like you need to be more skilled. Now, I think stars are stars, but I do think for you to get to the league, I think you need to have way more skills than you had to have 20 years ago or 25 years ago or 30 years ago. And to be honest, you could have said that about the era before that era, right? So I don't understand why it was that controversial, but it is what it is.
Yeah, that's true. And it just goes to show you in terms of the demand of players. And even looking at LeBron, for example, you know, a lot of people, like I said, try to talk about, you know, the league soft and this and that, but the evolution of the game. He shot 40% from three on three attempts in that 2013 season. This year, he's shooting 39%, so roughly 40% from three on 7 attempts. That's an 8-year span. So that goes to show you he's had to adapt. All of these guys have had to adapt.
And you know, and even to tie it up, if, you know, if you want to watch evolution of the game, literally just watch LeBron. Like, literally watch, because he's been around long enough. Right. He's been 18 years in this game. Right. So you've literally, he's the guy, him and KG, literally for 20 years ago, the game went from hand checking, pushing the zone defense to no defense of 3 seconds, to all this rule changes, to guys barely shooting threes, to position those basketball, to everyone shoots a three. You get a three, I get a three, you get a three. You know what I'm saying? Like, he is literally the benchmark for all of those evolutions of the game, where he's had to evolve. Or like, oh, you know, people would have said before, the thinking was he's going to evolve into a post player, which he has. But what he's done instead is, like, he's evolved to, I'm going to shoot from 35 feet because I have to. This is something that needs to be a part of my game if I want to thrive for the next 5 to 6 years, right? And it's the same thing. When we're looking at basketball, it's different. You know, I think it's a lot easier to talk about. I think the one-on-one defense back 20, 30 years ago was probably better because you could hold and manipulate a guy. But I do also think the back end defense is way harder to manipulate now than ever, because there's so many defenses, and, you know, Dan's done breakdowns of this before, where you can't help you. So a lot of the defenses that get played today are illegal 25, 30 years ago. So I mean, you can go about this all day. We do a whole pod on this.
Yeah, for real. And I think to your point, it just goes to show you in terms of the challenges of today. Yeah, maybe you can't guard a guy one-on-one the same way you could have in 1995. But like you said, you're going to have more guys who are going to be, you know, they're going to have to do more things. You don't necessarily have to be in the illegal defense situation in terms of the pre-3 seconds era. Where let's say Omar and I are on the weak side and I'm on defense, I have to be like within a guarding position in terms of him. And let's say a guy's on the opposite 3-point line, one-on-one, you know, whereas today I have to load up that's going to shift the defense over. And now you have a guy playing 1-on-3 and you can beat that first line of defense, but it's about that second and third guy. And I think, to your point, that's where the beauty of the game has definitely made things easier for guys to make their money.
Yeah, like even a guy like Taylor Horton Tucker is more skilled than a guy like Steve Kerr, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's that, you know, like to just kind of show you like the stuff he has to read on the second side. So the ball starts on one side and swings to the other. That guy's got to be able to make the reads, or the short rolls they do with the Lakers, especially, where he's got to dive and make the dump off the arrow, or he's got to finish himself, or he's got to kick to the three. So much more that's being asked of on the offense. So, yeah, it's a good talk, man.
Yeah, for sure. Appreciate you once again. Before I wrap things up, you got anything else to add?
No, man, just, you know, if you're old, just know that things evolve. We're not saying we don't love you. We're not saying what you don't – what you provide isn't valued. It's just – it's changed. All right, man. So that's pretty much it.
Yeah, for sure. And just once again, I want to thank you, Omar, for taking time out of your evening. Once again, you can follow us at Daniel's Den Hoops on Instagram. And also, don't be afraid to send me an email, danielsden.hoops@gmail.com. You guys got anything you want to ask? We can have some dialogue in terms of maybe some things you want to discuss. But yeah, I hope you guys are staying safe out there. Wash your hands. Take care of yourself. Peace.
Peace.
Thank you for taking your time to listen to Daniel's Den of Hoops. And yeah, you can follow us on Instagram at Daniel's Den Hoops. Facebook, we're also available at Daniel's Den of Hoops. And we're available on various platforms in terms of where you get your podcast. Hope you guys enjoy this episode. Take care.